I have the honor and privilege of serving Western Washington Area 72 as their alternate delegate. It's my first year of the rotation. I know all areas function differently, as I've especially learned through Zoom, being able to pop in at so many different areas. But my primary function, in addition to, well, the primary function for me as alternate delegate is to be ready to step in for a delegate at any given moment. And so I get to learn all the stuff that she learned along the way. But I do have my own job, and our alternate delegate in our area is primarily tasked with the education and support of our GSRs and DCMs. Through several area inventories, we found that not only did our GSRs need schools or workshops or panels or whatever you want to call them, our DCMs did as well. And so that started a rotation and a half ago. So that's a little newer to our area, having specific, just trainings instead of one-on-ones with them. And so that has evolved throughout the years. And then as we move to a virtual platform so far for this rotation, it became apparent to me that I was not going to get the kind of engagement that our area needs by having our traditional 6 to 8 hour GSR schools. That no one wants to sit on Zoom that long, let alone a new GSR. And so I broke them down into, I called it GSR University. And we had four courses, so they're about an hour and a half long with plenty of time with question answers. And it was really well received. And I did the same things for DCMs. And it was after one of, I think it was after my 201 GSR course. I put on three GSR courses each month, the same course, and then one DCM one. And it was after one of the GSR ones, I was in a meeting with D and I was just gushing of, I love my GSRs and it was so much fun. And the engagement going on and on. And she was like, wait a minute, what is this? What are you talking about? And the next thing I know, I'm here in Florida. So that's kind of how that happened. But it's fun. It's something I enjoy. I am a huge fan of promoting the attractiveness of service. I am a product of service and Alcoholics Anonymous. Most of the successes I've had in my life as I've stayed sober fall in direct correlation to my service journey. So I'm incredibly passionate about serving alcoholics, as well as I fully understand that service is the amount of service I do directly impacts my life in positive ways. And so, and sometimes service has been the only good thing going on in my life at times. So I've kind of been all over the spectrum in the time I've had to stay sober. So D had asked me tonight to basically talk about myself, which I have no problem doing that, for about 15 minutes, my experience, strength, and hope, what qualifies me, how I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, then spend about 15 minutes on my service journey. And then followed by a bit of an orientation of what to expect over the next month. And then leave plenty of time for question answers. We'll have plenty of time for question answers, and I'll probably commingle my experience, strength, and hope with my general service journey, because that's actually how I usually share my experience, strength, and hope, because I can't separate the two, because well, you'll hear why in a minute. So yeah, my name is Heather. I'm an alcoholic. I've been sober since March 14th, 2003. I got here on a real winning streak, as I'm sure all of you did. I back up a bit. I come from a good family. I have two parents that love me. I have a sister. I tease her that my life was perfect until I was two and a half when she was born. And then I had to share the attention that I was getting from everybody with her. And I grew up in Seattle area, Seattle, Washington. Not only do my parents love me, they're actually still together and they still like each other. It's kind of this weird thing. And they're not alcoholic, surprisingly. I have plenty of alcoholism in my family, but not with my parents. And I had a good life, and I was given a good education, again, love and attention. And I say that because I know that I was born an alcoholic. It's in my genes. Nothing made me alcoholic. There was nothing in my environment or my upbringing that would have given anybody the idea that this girl's going to be an alcoholic. I was a late bloomer, and as far as drinking, my parents had put me in this really small private school. Like, there was 43 in my senior class, and we signed all this stuff, basically saying we wouldn't drink, we wouldn't smoke, we wouldn't swear, we wouldn't have sex, basically wouldn't do anything fun. And but it was such a small environment, and that was the I was already set in my ways of people pleasing and caring so much about what other people thought about me, that really kept me on the straight and narrow until my senior prom. Like, I'd gotten into the college I wanted to go to, and really, if they found out I drank at my senior prom, there really wasn't much they could do to me anymore. And so I drank for the first time. And I remember everything about that moment. It was at to that point, that was the best moment of my life. My cells finally were like, yes, finally, like, this is amazing. And it wasn't like I had a little sip here and there of stuff, but that was the first time I ever actually was able to drink without any adult supervision. And no one was like, oh, you can just have a sip, hon. It was like the bottle was mine, and it was great. And so, nothing bad happened. I drank, I didn't get in trouble, I graduated. And I hadn't quite honed my skills on procuring alcohol just yet, so it was pretty challenging. And then I went off to college, and I was going to a small private college at this time. And for the first time in my life, though, I went from being a big fish in a little pond to a little fish in a big pond. And I didn't acclimate well. I had to meet people for the first time. I was away from home for the first time. I had a pretty scary dating experience where, like, restraining order kind of stuff happened. So my first instance with, like, a little bit of trauma and shock and fear and all this stuff kind of happened in my life. And I started to turn to alcohol. And, bad, even then, bad stuff just started happening, but it wasn't that bad. I would black out from the start. I thought that was kind of fun. But I always drank to get drunk. That was always my goal. And people ask, like, when do you think you crossed the line? And I honestly believe I crossed that imaginary line the first time I drank, because the moment I drank, it was on. Like, the wheel started turning. I was always thinking of ways to drink, to find it, to when can I have more? When can I have more? And I started charting my life on that course. Like, I was at this good private college, and it was hard. I actually had to study, and I wasn't super comfortable, and I couldn't drink and do things like the way I wanted to. So I did what any good alcoholic would do. I transferred to the drinking college in our state, which is Washington State University, or Wazoo, Washington State Cougs, and I transferred there for my sophomore year. And that's the perfect place for a budding alcoholic to land. And I it was perfectly acceptable to be drunk all the time, at least with the group I landed in. And I joined a sorority specifically so that I could drink more often, and it was always paid for. And while I was there, I found a bunch of non-AA approved substances, which I incorporated very easily and well into my life. And that was basically what the next 4 years were about, was drinking and partying. And it's funny, I can look now and see, like, not a lot of bad stuff happened, but there wasn't a lot of good stuff that happened too. It was like the bar just kept dropping a little bit. Like, I went from being a straight A student to, getting by with, like, a 3.0, because I knew if I kept a 3.0, my parents would leave me alone. I wasn't a drunk driver, but I always dated someone who could drive my drunk ass around. I didn't care that they got DUIs, but as long as I didn't get one, that was okay. And then all sorts of other, great stuff happening. Waking up where, I didn't know where I was, didn't know who I was with, all that fun stuff that we do. And I always thought, oh, well, when I grow up, this is when I'll stop. When I'll grow up. Well, so I'm graduating from college, and I'm supposed to, get, like, a real job. And then I would have to cop this attitude of, well, they're going to make me drug test, and how dare they ask me what I do on my own time? Just I was such a brat. And so I graduated, have this fancy degree, and I come back over to the Seattle area and I'm bartending because that's the only job I can get without a drug test. And I can't get anything in, what I got my career in. And it was then that my alcoholism really, really took off. And in less than 2 years, because of the drinking and the other substances I had added into my little repertoire of things to get me through the day, my life was a disaster. I was about 20 pounds less than I am now. My skin was a mess, my hair was falling out, and I twitched a lot. And my family was incredibly worried when they saw me. I avoided contact at all costs, but there were some things that were unavoidable. And my employer, I got fired from a bartending job because I couldn't make it to I think it was a 5 o'clock shift. That was too early, 5 p.m. And that was too late. I mean, too early for me. I couldn't get into work on time. And that was just, a list of, really awesome things I'd been doing along the way, but I remember when I was getting fired, and the man that fired me actually had about 10 years sober at the time. His name is Tom, and he was my big boss. Like, I didn't like Tom. Tom was old. He was like 40, and he was sober, and so therefore utterly uncool. And he just looked at me, he's like, "What's up with Heather?" And I was like, "Nothing, I'm fine." And I mean, I'd been up for like a week. I looked like crap. And he was like, "No, really, what's up with Heather?" And I just broke down in his office and just started crying and was like, "I don't know what to do. I can't stop." Like, and that had scared me. Like, I'd had a moment about a month before where I remember I was sitting in traffic on 520. It's this floating bridge we have in Western Washington. It's between Seattle and Bellevue, and it literally floats on the water. So if you're stuck there in traffic, it actually kind of moves. You can get kind of seasick. It's pretty awful. But I remember I was stuck in traffic and I had been fighting all morning, making that call to get what I needed to get through the day. And I remember that moment where I just gave up and was like, "You're gonna call him anyway. You may as well just get it over. Maybe you won't have to wait all night to get what you need. Like, you feel awful." And I just remember it was so disheartening because it was until that moment I thought I had control of things. And it was that moment where I just gave up was when things really went bad, when I wasn't even trying to like control it anymore. And so I was ready for something needed to happen. Like, the way I was living wasn't sustainable. And so as he's firing me, he says, "I think you need some help. Why don't you call this place? It's called Overlake, and see about getting some outpatient help. And that's the only way I'm going to give you a recommendation for this job. You've been out for almost 2 years. That's the only way." And so I called there. They only have a psych ward, so they directed me to someplace that could, I mean, actually help me. I probably could have gotten into the psych ward at that point, but people that are better equipped to handle alcoholics. And so I call there and I make my appointment and I go in for my assessment. And I remember it's been really great because I've been able to see this man at meetings since I've been sober. But his name is Joe, and he took my assessment, and I was as honest as I could be at the time. I think all of you can understand that. Like, I was as honest as I was being honest with myself at that time about what I was putting in my body on a daily basis. And I remember he looked at me and he said, "I got some good news and some bad news for you, sweetheart." And I was like, "What's the good news?" He's like, "You don't need outpatient." And I was like, "Yes, see, I'm not that bad." And then I was like, "Wait a minute, what's the bad news?" And he's like, "You need inpatient." And so that was a big blow to my ego. But I was in enough trouble with basically everybody. Like, my parents, my dad was ready to disown me. My sister wasn't talking to me. My mom would have a physical reaction if I would raise my voice. She would cower because I'd become so verbally abusive. My boyfriends had found out about each other. Yes, boyfriends. I had one in Texas and one in Seattle. They found out about each other, so I was in trouble with them. My roommates were pissed. My employer had just fired me, so it was a real banner week for, me. So I thought, maybe I should go to treatment. That would fix it. So I go to treatment. And I'm just there to quit the hard stuff. I'm going to drink and smoke pot when I get out. That was my plan. And the I don't know what happened other than I caught alcoholism in treatment. That's the best way I can describe it. I went in saying, no, I won't do this. No, I won't do that. And within a couple days, I'd be like, maybe that's not such a horrible idea. Maybe what they're saying might work. Well, it couldn't be any worse than what I'm doing, kind of that attitude. It was more like a meh. It wasn't like this is going to work for me. It's just like, hopefully, it just won't get worse. It is really kind of the attitude I had. And what happened was, in addition to catching alcoholism, I remember I had been in there about a week ish, and I'd been pretty miserable. I was really sick my first week. I don't know how your first week getting sober was, but mine was terrible. And I was in group, and they gave our counselor the day off, and so we were reading from the big book, and we were actually reading There Is a Solution together as a group. And I came out of that group and I had this huge smile on my face. And everybody was like, whoa, why are you smiling? Like it was making people nervous. And I was like, there is a solution. And they're like, what is it? And I was like, I don't know, but there is a solution. And I was so happy. And they were like, okay, crazy. But what it is now, and it's like this bittersweet moment for me because I remember that moment like it was yesterday, and that was like 18 years ago, is I was filled with hope. But the sad part for me is I had no idea what I was feeling because it had been so long since I felt hope. I couldn't recognize the feeling for what it was. And so I'm so grateful I have never forgotten that moment because that was really that fork in the road where I still said no to everything, but then I'd come back and be like, well, maybe. Okay, fine. It was like they wanted me to move into clean and sober housing. I wasn't gonna live with eight women again. Like I did a sorority. Okay, fine. Like whatever. They said go to 90 meetings in 90 days. Well, don't you know me? Oh, wait, I have no life anymore. Okay, fine. They said don't go back to that bartending job. Fine. Like just nor like things that we would tell anybody that's newly sober. And I finally conceded and I was like, fine, I'll do it. And I did not, I do not do things perfectly. I moved into clean and sober housing. I got a sponsor right away. I got three of them actually in the first month, but I stuck with the third. We stuck. It was a good fit. Like it was when I finally actually picked a sponsor myself. The first one was a requirement to get out of treatment. The second one, some very kind lady, we'll just leave it that way. Very kind lady told me she would be my sponsor. And then I finally found one that I chose to be my sponsor. And I went tonight, I went to a meeting a day for like a year. It was like I had anything else to do. I mean, that was, I was unencumbered by employment when I got sober. And so I did that. And I was so, it's just, I look back at that first year and I know that my higher power had a hand in everything that was happening to me because there's a lot of things I didn't do that they told me to do. Like I immediately found this incredibly cute guy. I think it was my second or third meeting out of treatment. He was so handsome and he had like 18 months sober and he had a car and he had a job and he thought it was amazing. And 2 weeks later, we were broke up because I realized that like there's a reason why they tell you to like not date. And then 2 weeks after that, after I'd gotten a job as a deli clerk at a grocery store, I didn't feel very well. And what do you know? I'm pregnant. That was a great day. Actually, it was another fork in the road moment for me, and it was that day that I'm on my lunch break at my minimum wage job with two pregnancy tests, which by the way, I had to borrow money from a coworker to get the pregnancy test because I didn't have any money. And they both said I was pregnant. And that was when my first thought was, oh my God, a beer will fix this. And that was the moment I realized I'm an alcoholic. That was that moment for me. It wasn't in treatment. I thought maybe I had a problem with alcohol, but that was that moment because normal people, I knew enough to know that normal people didn't think beer fixed pregnancy. So that's that for me, that was the moment I realized I was an alcoholic. So the first call I made was to my sponsor, who I hadn't been using. And I said, "Oh my God, I'm pregnant and I'm crazy. Will you please help me?" And she said, "Be at my house tomorrow at 7 and we'll get busy." Then I called my parents, my poor dad. Oh, I bless him. He couldn't quite figure out how that had happened. And I was like, "Do you really want me to explain?" And then he put my mom on the phone. And, there was that. And then I called baby daddy. And that call went as I expected. And because he said he would support any decision I made. And I said, "Well, I'm having this baby." And he said, "What?" And so there was that. That didn't go well. But I'm happy to say I have a almost 17 and a half year old son who's never seen his mom drink. And I'm not quite sure how the dad is doing, but that is okay. That was his choice. And I just know that I have control over my choices, not anybody else's. So, and that was a big blessing. And it was from that moment on, I was on a mission. I got to get through these steps before I have this baby, but I'm so grateful I didn't recognize my character defect of perfectionism until I was halfway through my amends, because I needed that character defect for a little bit longer to really get through some stuff, because by the time I had that baby, my dad was my advocate, so they didn't give me any narcotics even if I asked for them. My sister cut my sister was my birthing coach. And my mom cut my son's umbilical cord. So to me, that's an amazing example of the miracle of the amends process, because I didn't just say, "I'm sorry and I'm sober now." I did what my sponsor told me. And I made those initial amends, and then I got to work amending my behavior and being the daughter and the sister that they deserve. And then I'm still working on that. I still fail on a regular basis, but that's this is a journey, not a destination. And so, but that same sponsor who got me through those steps, another thing she told me, and I've carried with me this entire journey, is she said, "Heather, learn the difference between an inconvenience and a hardship. Service is often inconvenient, but it's rarely a hardship. And you will always say yes unless it's a hardship." I didn't quite sec sorry, we have those stupid cottonwood trees. They're just killing me. So I took that to heart, and my poor sponsees, they hear that from me, and they either like it or they don't. If they like it, I still sponsor them. If they don't, they're working with someone else. And that's okay, because that's how I sponsor. You're not I don't get to sit around, so neither do you. I'm responsible. If that means washing coffee cups or picking up cigarette butts or folding up chairs or giving GSR reports or chairing a meeting or giving a report or driving, 6 hours to go to some conference. I don't even know why I'm going, but someone said, "Get in the car." Get in the freaking car. Get in the freaking car. That, now granted, I make it sound easy, but it took some coordination. I had a baby this whole time. Like, I'm an only parent. But I'm very fortunate that my parents have been amazing and recognize that they like the daughter, that they get a lot more when she's active in Alcoholics Anonymous. So, some people are like, "Oh, I talked to my boyfriend, or I talked to my spouse about the service position that I'm about to embark on before I make myself available." I talked to my parents. And now today, like when I made myself available for alternate delegate, I talked to my parents and my son, and I said, "This is what it's going to look like for you if I'm elected. I'm responsible to not just those I serve in Alcoholics Anonymous, but those I serve outside of Alcoholics Anonymous, and that's equally important." And so my service journey, well, it started before I even had a real, an official elected position. My sponsor said, "Well, don't just sit there. If someone's picking up chairs, pick up chairs." That person looks like they need help cleaning the coffee cups. Your smoker, clean the ashtrays. You know, like do your part. You know, hey, that girl looks brand new. I only have 30. I don't care if you only have 30 days. You have 30 days. She has one. Like there's no you only. Or but I, like I can't say but. I'm not allowed to say but to my sponsor. I can say but just BUTT. That's the only but I can say to her. And so that's how it started. And then, you know, I bounced around. I bounced around quite a bit my first couple years sober. Like I moved twice. So I didn't really start picking up roots until about 3 years sober. And so that's when I had like a home group I was at more than like 6 months. And so I started doing the official service positions, coffee maker, secretary. My home group doesn't, for the longest time, didn't believe in greeters. We were all expected to be greeters, period. We only got greeters when we moved because people didn't know where we were. But so I was always greeting. I've always been sponsoring. If the service work I do gets too much for me to sponsor, then I need to reassess the kind of service I'm doing because newcomers come first. That's also what my sponsor taught me. And then I got asked to go to a potluck. I was told I was going to a potluck, but it was going to take like all day. And so I got in the car. Well, I show up at this potluck, and it's actually an area quarterly, which a lot of you, I know it's different areas, you would call that like an assembly. And what do you know? The guy who drove me was the DCM, the district committee member. And the guy that was his sponsor was also in the car, was a freaking area alternate chair. And I'm like, first of all, I don't even know what those words meant. They just said these things to me and they just said, sit down. And it wasn't a potluck. I had to buy my own lunch. And I came home 8 hours later and I was like, what was that? That was amazing. I have no idea what just happened. What does PI mean? What does CPC mean? What are these financial reports? Why do we have so much money? What's a delegate? Wow. Like, and just like all these questions. And it's like I can see the smiles on their face now. And they were just like, ha ha, I got one. But I was hooked because whether it's my ego or my pride or whatever you want to call it, I still to this day do not like being the dumbest person in the room. And I felt like the dumbest person in the room, and I never wanted to be that again. So, therefore, how do I not be the dumbest person in the room? Well, you get elected GSR. And then after you get elected GSR, I went to GSR schools, and that was when they were all day things. And I swear, I was going over this stuff when I became alternate delegate, and I was like, oh my God, I was such a crappy GSR. Like, I didn't do half this stuff. And it's like, I know I was taught it. I know I heard it, but it just didn't register. And same thing with the DCM stuff. Like, I did the best I could with what I had in front of me. And if I could do it again, I would definitely do better. But I can't. But I can sure try to help other people be a better GSR than I was. That's for sure. It's not that hard. And so I was a GSR but I had a plan. See, my plan, Heather shouldn't have plans. Let's just put it that way. But my plan was to be alt GSR because I didn't really want to get into like the serious, like time commitment general service until my son was older. He was about 5 when this happened. And, the day of our elections, I found out that our alternate GSR was freaking moving. So I was immediately elected GSR. Okay, fine. Well, I was GSR, I was also district secretary because I was like the kind of the queen of the 1 month service commitments. And plus because I didn't listen to people when they were like, you know, when you're GSR, you should probably just not be available for more stuff because it's a really big job. And you know, sure, if you can handle more, fine. But I was like, I'm fine, I'm there anyway. So, but it was great because I actually paid attention to the district meeting. Because I had to take notes. So it was actually a really great training ground for DCM because I think I paid more attention than the alternate. And what happened was our alternate DCM, he took a little break from AA and did a little more research for a bit. He came back, he's sober, and he just celebrated, I think, 10 years, 10 or 11 years. But he took a little break And we needed an alt DCM with 5 months left in the rotation. So I was alt DCM too, which kind of, yeah, that's not really how things should happen, but whatever. And then the next thing I know, I'm DCM. So basically, in 4 years, I did what I thought was going to take 8 years. And how my area works is once you're a DCM, you can make yourself for one of the available for one of the six elected positions. And then if you don't get one of those, there's like 14 appointed positions you could submit a service resume for. And then I did, and I wanted PI or sorry, public information or cooperation with the professional community or something, you know, one of those hips looking cool, sexy kind of committees. And I got accessibility. And I was like, assess a what? Like, I'd never participated in any committee work. And so I was like, went to AA.org and read everything I possibly could on accessibility and found out how utterly ignorant I was and how it's not just wheelchairs and languages. And I had a blast. I had a real passionate committee who are just very passionate about what they're doing. And it was a great trip. I learned so much. Really what I learned is I can have a plan, but the room is really going to tell me what the plan is, because the committee is really there for the committee chairs, not for me. And so I need to make sure that what is being presented is what they actually are need help with, not what I think they need help with. So it was just really a great opportunity. And then so I did that for 2 years, and then we're having our election assembly. We have six elected positions in our area. We have delegate, alternate delegate, chair, alternate chair, treasurer, and alternate treasurer. And the alternates, they're really not an alternate. They're like, we have our own jobs. So I make myself available for alternate delegate. I don't get it. Chair, I don't get it. Alt chair, I don't get it. And then they're supposed to have whatchamacallit, you get to requalify if you're going to be treasurer or alternate treasurer because it's a different skill set. And I'd gone into that day being like, I am never, ever bleeping going to be available for treasurer. At the time, I worked in corporate marketing, and I remember not getting elected and for alternate chair. And then we had a lunch break, and I was like sitting there, and this little voice inside my head said, "What are you afraid of?" And I was like, "I'm afraid of failing. Money stuff scares me. It's really scary. Like I'm not a bookkeeper, I'm not an accountant." And the little voice just said, "So what? It doesn't say in the job description you have to be one of those to be available." And so I wrote down a qualification on a napkin and I qualified and I was elected by the second ballot. I have no idea what I said. But then all of a sudden I have this gal working in corporate marketing that's in charge of a $120,000 budget. You know what? The money was still there when I was done. I learned how to use QuickBooks. I learned how to read financial reports. Every treasurer and their mother who had served the area was there to help me and make sure that I didn't fall on my face. And I was able to visit over half our districts. We have 42 districts in our area and give seven tradition talks. So I played on my strengths. Let's talk about money. Where does money and spirituality mix? Like, they didn't elect me because I was good with money. They elected me because I learned is because we needed to have some more conversations about what seventh tradition looks like. That was why I was the treasurer. And then I was able to serve as alternate chair, last rotation as chair, which was, I'm so glad I'm not chair. I was chair when we closed down. Now Crystal's the chair as we reopen. That was definitely a trip. And then, I've been elected to serve as the alternate delegate for Area 72. So it's now, and now my son is, he's going to be graduating in a year, and who knows where I'll be. But I've been able to serve this whole time, and it's funny is because as I've served, my career has improved in direct correlation to the different service positions. It's been pretty crazy, and it's because, and I look at the skills I've learned, Alcoholics Anonymous. GSR showed me how to show up, how to be where I said I was going to be. Secretary taught me how to attentively listen in meetings. Accessibility taught me that it doesn't matter what plan I go into with, I better be prepared to do what the group wants, not what Heather wants, or else it's not going to go well. Alternate chair taught me how to herd cats because it deals with host committees. And chair taught me how to really overcome fear because our assemblies are 800 people. So if you fall on your face in front of an assembly, literally or figuratively, 800 people see it. So that taught me to be fearless. And alternate delegate, I don't know, I'll let you know in a year what I was supposed to learn. But that's really where I'm at with that. I love general service. And I can say this to you because most of you aren't in my area. I'm looking at moving to Idaho in a year and a half. And I've fallen in love with someone I met at a Pacific Northwest conference 6 years ago. And we've been friends for a really long time, and we've been a couple for a little under a year. And people are like, I can't believe you're gonna go. You could be delegate. And I'm like, well, I didn't get involved in this to be delegate. I got in this to serve. And I'm looking forward to whatever Idaho Area 18 has in store for me once I move there in a year and a half, once my rotation, because I've committed to this rotation. I'm not leaving until I've finished this rotation, my area stuck with me for another year and a half. It's I've learned to, not do like the typical AA thing. What's a second day in Alcoholics Anonymous look like? A moving truck outside the house. We're not doing that. So there's that. So that's a little bit about me and my journey and where I'm at right now. A little bit about what the next 4 weeks look like. Of course, the first 2 weeks are about the general service representative, and the second 2 weeks are about the district committee member positions. And it's basics. And I was looking through all the documentation that I used for my GSRs and my DCMs, and I've tried to strip out the Area 72 specific stuff because I know every area does things a little different, but there's stuff that are, it's universal. It doesn't matter what area you're from. And so I will be using things from AA.org. I will be using the service manual. I'm a huge fan of the service manual. I was very intimidated by the service manual when I was a GSR, but someone once told me, like, if you could just read at least the first three chapters, you'll be okay. And they're right, it kind of just where you're at. Talk about things that have helped me along the way, whether that's I don't always have to, I don't always know the answer, but I know where to find answers. And I think that's really important that I empower you to find answers. Like whether that's on AA.org or like if you have questions like this, maybe you should talk to your DCM. If you have questions like this, maybe you should talk to your delegate. Service manual studies. I'm a huge fan of service manual studies, tradition studies. Sometimes there's just concept studies where they don't actually study the whole service manual, they just study the concepts. Those are great too. But really, I want to, of course, talk about the basics like GSR and your responsibility and role when it comes to your group, your district, your area, and then, with your delegate in the General Service Conference. Same thing for the DCMs. What does that look like with your responsibility to your groups, to your district, to your area, and to your delegate in the General Service Conference? But really, what I hope to convey is, stay calm. It's only general service. Like really, this can be fun. That like our attitude while we serve is key, or I guess my attitude while I serve is key. That I hope that I'm promoting the attractiveness of service, and I hope that you will as well, because I'm always looking for my replacement. Someone needs to come behind me to do the work, and if I have a crappy attitude about it, why would anybody step up and volunteer? Why? And so, but also like ways that I've found or have, other people have conveyed to me about helping with engagement. That's always a big problem for or an issue that GSR is running with their business meeting. They're like, I can't get anybody to listen to me, or they won't give me any time to talk about stuff. And then DCMs, they get the whole like, no one's coming to my district meeting, or they come and I get blank stares, or I've got GSRs, but we have no committee. You know, we don't have like anybody doing committee work. Like, what does that look like? And it's during those type of conversations, I really hope that we can engage the questions that you'll send to D and things like that, because that's, I don't know, it's really cool we can get other people thoughts and opinions and involvement on there, because I'm not the end all be all in knowing how things happen. There's, you all have your own experience that you're bringing to this, and I hope that we can find a way to get that shared as well with others. And then of course rotating on how to do a good handoff. Like, it's not just like mic drop, I'm out. It's like, no, like let's make sure that the person coming up behind me, you know, it starts off better than I did. I want to leave each position better than I left it, and I want to set up the person following me better than it was set up for me. That's always my goal. Now, whether or not I attain it, another thing, but that's always my goal, my plan. And then, of course, the not being overwhelmed, like, oh my gosh, I had no idea what I signed up for. And like I'm starting to freak out, like that I feel like someone's sitting on my chest. Like, I hope that through these, maybe that load will lighten, because it's, this is some fun stuff. I think this stuff's great. And then lastly is how to advocate and get yourself educated. We cannot learn this by us. It doesn't happen by osmosis. Like, it's an investment. This is an investment in yourself. Thank you for investing time today and then through the next 4 weeks or so, like investing in yourself and your future in Alcoholics Anonymous along your journey so that you can be the best GSR. I think that's such a great thing. That's a gift you're giving to your group to be a better GSR than you thought you could be. And so there is that, because it just, the information's out there, but it's a lot of information. I mean, it's not like when you're elected coffee maker and they're like, okay, here are the instructions on how to make coffee. Here's the key, show up an hour before and clean up after yourself. That's pretty basic. Like, they could put that on a half a page of paper and you could probably memorize it in a week and be fine. They elect you as GSR and they say, boom, here's a service manual. Boom, here's an area handbook. Oh, and we have a district handbook too, or whatever. And you're like, holy crap, I have six websites and like 500 pages of documentation to read. Like, that is not like coffee maker. That is not fair. So, you know, hopefully this will help take the edge off a bit and get you going in the right direction to continue your education. That's about it out of me.
Oh, thank you so much, Heather. Woohoo! I miss the clapping and all that stuff when someone's done. But thank you. Thank you so much for saying yes. And thank you for sharing a little bit about us as we move into this for the next 4 weeks. Those of you that have questions, please send them through the chat now. I thought you were crying, so you really got allergies?
Yeah, this fetching cottonwood is just killing me. It's like there's white stuff everywhere. Like, you go by corners and it's like it looks like lint. Like, it's pretty heavy right now.
Oh,
First world
sorry
problems.
about that.
Okay, first world problems.
What is GSRU University? Somebody's asking, how is this training different from GSR University? I think some people are just kind of confused with the word. I know you wanted to make it fun, so explain it.
Yes, thank you. So, GSR University is just something I made up in my head when we went from when I was elected alternate delegate in October, and it was trying to plan for the upcoming 2 year rotation, and realizing that probably for the first year of our rotation, when the bulk of the training of GSRs happens, we weren't going to be in person. And our GSR schools or workshops or whatever you want to call them are generally 6 to 8 hours long. And where you just go over everything. It's like this huge information dump. And because what happens at our area is We, meaning like the delegate and alternate, we travel to the groups in the districts. They don't necessarily always come to us. So we're always traveling all over Western Washington. So there'll be smaller regional type events and we'll go to, and there might be 10 people, there might be 60 people, things like that. Who knows? But they'll be at a space. And so for the coordination of getting people there and renting the space, usually there's like a one day big thing. And normally I would do 2 to 6 of those a month for the first few months of the rotation to get everybody trained. And realizing that we're on Zoom and no one wants to spend 8 hours on Zoom, I was like, I need to break these up into like smaller bite-sized pieces, like 1.5 hour kind of things. And so I came up with GSR University, just renamed it, told everybody if they went to all four courses, they would graduate, which would be amazing because some people never graduated from anything, and you are going to graduate from GSRU. How great is that? And there'll be a prize for you at the end. I don't know what the prize is, but there'll be a prize. I know what the prize is now. I can tell you because I don't see any GSRs from my area on here. I'm getting pins made, little buttons made that said, keep calm. It's only general service. And I'm going to send them to all the DCMs, and those who graduated are going to get little buttons that say, keep calm. I'm just waiting for approval from the finance committee. And then I'm also going to send them all like a diploma. So, anyways, it was just a way to make it fun because I don't know, I needed it to be fun. And the GSRs loved it. They were like, I'm going to GSRU, or like, oh my gosh, I missed a course. Like, I'd have makeup courses because people missed them and they wanted to graduate so badly. So it was really fun, and I haven't done the final numbers, but I'm pretty sure I got over 300 GSRs to attend and over 200 that actually graduated. And same with DCMs and all. And this is also alternates. Like, I don't distinguish between alternates. I encourage every alternate GSR to remember that. Well, I was taught that wherever my GSR is, the alternate is. I'm in their back pocket kind of thing. Like, it's not, oh, just show up when they're not there. And so that's kind of how that happened. And then I did the same thing with the DCMs, the district committee members. We have 42 districts, and so in theory there was 84 people that could attend, and we had over 60 between the alternates and the DCMs that graduated. So it was something to be fun. We did it over 5 months, but we took March off for our preparing our delegate for the conference. So January was course 101, then 201 in February, 301 in April, and 401 in March. And then so now we just, I mean, May. So we've just completed those courses. And now, we're kind of playing things month by month because things are starting to reopen around here. Though in June, I'm doing a roundtable instead on transitioning to hybrid and safely reopening, because that's what the DCMs and groups want to talk about. I asked them what they wanted to talk about, and then I've invited them to come in June to the GSR and DCM workshops if they missed them, because I wasn't going to schedule any additional GSR or DCM workshops since I was already doing four of them this month, that they could just show up where I'm going to be at if they wanted to go. And by the way, to each month, one of the GSR universities and one of the in the DCM university were all we had them all translated into Spanish because we have Spanish speaking districts and groups that participate in our area. So there was that. So yeah, great question.
That's wonderful stuff, talking about different ways with accessibilities. Let's see. Somebody's asking, what do you suggest for a new GSR to study first and then the next steps to becoming an informed GSR? I know you'll go over that the next 2 weeks.
Oh yeah. So, well, it's like which first? There's so many great first things you could do. First, take a deep breath. I would talk to, well, first I would check out AA.org, because I mean, you might have it on your area website or your district website, but AA.org. There's all the res there's all the G and I'm gonna actually show us next week where all this stuff is, but going there and looking at the resources, I love the pamphlet. The GSR pamphlet is great. So that's, I guess, where I would start, because it's a really great little, here's what you just got yourself into, and it gives you a really good overview. I also would, if you know how to get in touch with your DCM or your district committee member, reach out to them as well and let them know, hey, I'm new. Could use some help. What do you suggest? When's the next district meeting? Where am I supposed to be? Because I don't know, because sometimes you walk in and like there's been a nice handoff and you're the person before you said, oh, and our district meeting is on the second Wednesday of the month at 7 o'clock and this is where you need to go. And some of them is just like, oh, hey, you were in the bathroom and you just got elected GSR. Have fun. Like, I don't know where you kind of fall on that spectrum. And then also if you have, you know, I hope you all have sponsors. I hope you talk to them about what you just are embarking on. And if you have a service sponsor, when if you don't know what that is, we'll talk about that more in the next 2 months. But talk with them about what you just got involved in and talk to any and every past GSR that you can think of and pick their brain. So I know you asked for one thing, but you got five.
So. Thank you, my dear. And then somebody wants to know if they were recorded, the ones you did.
No, but all the documentation is available.
Yep, that's what I was going to ask you next, because I did put in the chat the GSR pamphlet along with the kit that you just talked about. That's in our chat. And then also the what you had sent me, I didn't know if you wanted to make that available along with the recordings as we move forward.
Go ahead and make that available. You can make that available. I will put the link to our area website in the chat, just so you know. You will actually have to register on our site. Basically, it does like AA.org where it asks if you're an alcoholic, and then you can log in and go to get the stuff behind the veil, behind the scenes. But it has the four different courses in English and in Spanish for both the GSR and the DCM. And so there's four different courses. I will tell you that there is some, what I have found is very Area 72 specific information in some of it, because it was geared towards our GSRs and our how our districts and area is structured. So there is that, but I mean, it has all the basic stuff that you would find in any GSR training. So I can put that information up there, but Dee has the documents and can share. And I don't mind if you share my alt delegate email information, or can I, cause I'm a co-host. I can share that.
Yeah, if you can do all that.
Yeah. Yeah. How about if any of you want it, just email me and I'll send it to you. Yeah, I don't mind at all.
So you love you so much, but it gives me less work. You're so wonderful.
Yeah. Oh, thanks. No, it's just so, I mean, so you don't have to register for another site you're never going to go to again. Like,
that's great. Yourself. That's wonderful.
And enough of that. There you go. So just email me and I'll shoot it all over to you.
Okay, so we got more. It says, let's see, what is the optimal time for a group to elect their new GSR to support the existing schedule of training and assemblies, etc.? And it still goes on. My experience is that this generally happens in June and December, but I am not sure if that is aligned to support the district and area.
Oh, great question. Well, because traditionally the GSR role is a 2-year position, and normally, you know, again, when I say this, just know that, just put a blanket caveat here, that every group and area and district is autonomous and you can do things however you like. So I'm just going to say that, but normally what happens is the GSR is elected so that they rotate in the same time the new panel for the area, and the area committee is elected, the DCMs are elected, and the GSRs are elected. So for example, my area, we're in the first year of a 2-year rotation. So the area, like I was elected in October to start in January of 2021, and I will go through December 22 is my rotation. Half the areas in the United States and Canada rotate on odd years and half rotate on even years. So it kind of depends on what area you live in to whether or not you rotate on even or odd years. I mean, most groups, I mean, I've heard of groups electing their new GSR in, at least in my area, in like September, because our assembly in October happens and they want to take the new GSR to the assembly to orientate them, but they don't really officially take over the job until January. In my group, we don't do that because we generally have an alternate. And so they get elected in either November or December, depending on when the Christmas holiday is, in reference to our December business meeting. And then we have our elections and they start in January. And so you have a new DCM and a whole bunch of new GSRs, and you have a new panel of elected area trusted servants. So it's generally, so sometimes as much as 3 months before usually is what I've seen.
Thank you so much, Heather. And then it says, how can explain to a group that does not, I'm missing a word or two, that does not have a G. So I don't know if this person will retype that question a little more. I'm thinking you're asking about explaining to a group that doesn't have a GSR, maybe the importance of it, but I'm not too sure. That's sounding like a DCM thing. I don't know if you want to touch that.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely that responsibility often falls on the DCM, not so much a GSR from another group to explain. But if someone asks me, you know, like, hey, how, like a lot of times it's someone's like, hey, like my group doesn't have a GSR. How do I explain to them why this is important for us to have a GSR? And there's just so many reasons why it's important. It's the best way to have your group's voice heard. That is how we are structured, so that the group's voice is through the GSR that's taken to the district, that's taken to the area, that's taken through our delegate to the General Service Conference, and then comes back. In addition to having our voice heard, it's how we as groups are aware of what's going on in AA as a whole through our delegate, in our area through our area committee, and our district through our DCM. And it comes back all through the group. In addition to that, a lot of GSRs are responsible for getting the information from either the central service office or intergroup, depending on how you're structured. So they're bringing that information from the local service offices back to the group. And without a GSR, you're in effect deaf. You have no, you're not aware. You don't hear what's going on. You're not getting the information about what's going on. And some people might be like, oh, well, we don't care. We're doing fine. We take care of the newcomers that walk into our group. And, you know, it's like, well, you know, how is your group listed? How do people find you? You know, and things. And it's like, it comes through a lot of these services that happen. So it's always a tough one. But that's usually where I start, is it's your voice. It's a way to have a voice.